This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Al Franken wins another round, but the race goes on and on and on. And they're still counting ballots in Saratoga Springs. From the top of Eagle Mountain to the graveyard of favorites, it's Wednesday. And time for another edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. The impeached governor of Illinois hopes to land a part on a television show. No, not Prison Break. While the same federal prosecutors take another look at Jesse Jackson Jr., New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg wants to reprise his role as a Republican. The politics of pirates and tea parties. We'll talk with some of the new Sons of Liberty in just a moment. But we begin, as always, with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Well, President Obama said that he will address the immigration issue perhaps next month, as early as next month. Now, he's going to Mexico tomorrow to meet with President Calderon, but ostensibly they're not going to be talking about illegal immigration. They'll be talking about drugs and violence and things like that on the border. But sticking with the theme of immigration, John McCain, as we all know, was born in the Panama Canal Zone.
From Zonian to Arizonian?
That's right. You do have a sense of humor. But before McCain, who were the last two people born outside the U.S. who ran for president,
major party candidates? So if you think you know the last two major party candidates for president, didn't have to make it onto the ballot, just made a credible run for president.
Right, sought the nomination.
Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org.
And what do they win?
The first one with the correct answer gets a fabulous no-prize T-shirt.
Wow.
All right. Let's see. And let's begin. Where else do we go every week but Minnesota?
Well, we keep thinking that it's, you know, people are rolling their eyes on this story, but there was a development this week, and that is that the three-judge panel that's been looking at appeals by the Franken and Coleman campuses to count previously rejected absentee ballots, they made their ruling this week after deciding last week that Al Franken was ahead by 312 votes, and that's what they decided today, that this week, that indeed Franken does have the lead and therefore, for all intents and purposes, is the winner. Norm Coleman's folks, including attorney Ben Ginsburg, said from the beginning that if that's going to happen, there's so many disenfranchised voters, they will appeal to the state Supreme Court. But right now, as of now, the way it stands now is that Franken has this 312-vote lead.
And the moment of decision, perhaps, will become as the governor, the Republican Tim Pawlenty, he's going to at some point be asked to sign a certificate of election.
Well, and I suspect that will happen once the state Supreme Court makes its ruling. The three-judge panel's ruling was unanimous on everything that Coleman wanted. He didn't get any of it. That they went straight down for Franken on almost every issue. And my suspicion is that Pawlenty, who's on, you know, being tugged from both sides of the issue, if the state Supreme Court does say, sorry, there's no appeal necessary, I suspect that Pawlenty will sign the certification for Franken's election, even if Coleman and the Republicans decide to go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
All right, and that could be another—that could drag this out, but at least they'd have a senator-elect, and presumably if he showed up in Washington, he'd get sworn in by the Democrats in the United States.
Unless the Republicans decide to filibuster that. Again, that's one of the strategies they're weighing, and again, it could go on and on, but again, I still think the state Supreme Court will be the final arbiter.
And it's April 15th. It's tax day. We're still talking about the recount in upstate New York as well, and absentee ballots are figuring prominently there as
they
well.
They absolutely are. It's been 162 days since the Minnesota election. The New York 20 upstate New York has only been since March 31st. It's only been 2 weeks. But there is some news also in that one as well, and it's good news for the Democratic candidate there, Scott Murphy, first-time candidate. Now his lead is up to 168 votes. It was 47 yesterday. Every vote counts. 168 votes. Jim Todisco says that it's still too premature. They have not counted Saratoga County yet, which is Todisco territory, which is the largest county in the district. So they haven't counted those absentee ballots yet. So it's still too premature to
declare a winner.
A winner, but again, Murphy has that lead.
And one of the ballots that Tedisco's folks were trying to throw out was the absentee ballot filed by the former congressional representative from that district.
Well, that's so bizarre. Their argument is that Kirsten Gillibrand should not have been allowed to vote by absentee because she was actually in the district, they claim. She was in the district on Election Day. One, Gillibrand's people say, first of all, she was not there. And second of all, a lot of people apply for an absentee ballot and vote absentee ballot thinking they won't be there. But of course, as it turned out, the vote should count.
Her people say she was in Washington earlier that day, couldn't make it by the time the polls closed, but did show up for the victory party that night. Anyway, let's see if we can get some answers to our trivia question. Again, the last two major party presidential candidates, people running for the nomination, who were born outside prior to John McCain, outside of the United States. And let's see if we can go with Jim, and Jim's calling from Long Island.
Yeah, I'd say George Romney and Barry Goldwater.
George Romney and Barry Goldwater.
Well, Barry Goldwater was born outside the U.S. If you make the case that he was born in the Arizona Territory before it was a state, so in that sense it's correct. But I want the last two, and Barry Goldwater is not among the last two. George Romney, who was born in Mexico, is among those last two. Of course, Romney, the father of Mitt Romney, governor of Michigan, ran for president in 1968. I need somebody now to accompany George Romney on this question.
All right, Jim, we can't send you half a T-shirt, so thanks very much for the call.
All right, close but no cigar.
Oh, there you go. Let's see if we can go now to Lin-Mail. Lin-Mail calling from Tulsa. Am I pronouncing your name correct?
Lin.
Lin. Oh, Lin-Mail. I see what they were telling me. Okay. Lin, boy. Okay, go ahead.
Wesley Clark and Romney.
Wesley Clark, of course, the former NATO commander who ran for the Democratic nomination not last time, but the time before that.
But Wesley Clark was born in the United States.
I believe he was.
So, but George Romney is the correct one. One of the two. We need somebody other than Romney.
Let's see if we can go to an email. This is from Michael in Philadelphia, and he says George Romney. Got that one correct. Right. And Barack Obama.
Well, until somebody comes up with something to prove them they're wrong, and of course this is on a lot of the right-wing web chats, but Barack Obama was indeed born in the United States of America.
In Hawaii. Was, by that time, yes, our 50th state.
He was born in 1961, and Hawaii became a state in 1959, so he was born in the United States.
Let's go to Tom, and Tom's with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
I would say the second one is Lowell Weicker.
Lowell Weicker, the late senator. The former senator and former governor of the state of Connecticut.
Right, and not many people remember that in 1979 he made a bid for the Republican presidential nomination. I think he lasted not too long. But he was born in Paris, France. That is the correct answer. It is Lowell Weicker.
Ding, 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 ding. Tom, you're the winner of a fabulous no-prize T-shirt.
I hate to tell you this. It's 2 weeks in a row.
No.
Yes.
Well, you're going to start a collection?
Yeah. I mean, do you have different colors?
No, they all come in black. Well, hang on, Tom.
My wife can wear one. Yeah,
by the way, is that Tom Mail?
That's Tom Mail. Tom Mail, right. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
All right, hang on, Tom. We'll get your address again. Oops. Yep, I hung up on Tom by mistake. But do we have his Tom call back? I think we probably have your information from last week anyway. But anyway,
serves him right twice
in a row. Anyway, let's keep going on. There is a primary coming up in Pennsylvania that is heating up with the incumbent Arlen Specter, a longtime incumbent there, facing a big challenge from the right.
Well, it's coming up, but it's a year from now, and yet there are Arlen Specters already on the air who will have the same opponent he had 5 years ago. And that's Pat Toomey, the former congressman, now the chairman, or actually a recently resigned chairman of Club for Growth. He's very conservative. Arlen Specter is going to face him again. The latest polls have Toomey well up, like in double digits. A lot of it is based on Specter's vote on President Obama's economic stimulus plan, only one of only three Republicans to do so.
And we made a joke earlier about Rod Blagojevich, and now has pleaded not guilty in the federal indictment against him. But those federal prosecutors are now looking into the possible charges against Jesse Jackson Jr.
Right. I mean, his name, his voice, you hear on tape phone calls when they were trying to decide when Rod Blagojevich was talking about who would replace Barack Obama in the Senate. And one of the felony counts against Blagojevich is that he tried to sell the seat. And the name of Jesse Jackson and perhaps the rumors that he is under investigation because of perhaps he was maybe willing to do more than other people would to get that seat. By the way, Blagojevich's TV show they're talking about, it's an NBC show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, a show I've never heard of, but
It's been on TV before, but they thought he could make $80,000 per episode unless he gets voted off the island on the first week.
But they want to drop him into the jungles of Costa Rica, which would be very interesting.
Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, previously a Democrat most of his life, but had to run as a Republican. He said to get on the ballot for November. After he goes to Gracie Mansion, he becomes a proud independent. And then, he's gotten the city charter changed so he can run for a third term as a what?
As a Republican. Well, first of all, he was elected in 2001 as a Republican, reelected in 2005 as a Republican. And then, of course, in 2007, when he was talking about running for president, he said, well, I can't do it as a Republican because I'm pro-choice, pro-gay rights. So therefore, I will switch to an independent. Now he needs to get on the ballot somehow, and independents are not going to you're not going to win as mayor of New York, although John Lindsay was elected in 1960 and reelected as an independent and a Liberal Party candidate. Anyway, that's a lot too much explanation there, but Bloomberg is now trying to get back in the good graces of the Republican Party. To get on the Republican ballot, you need the acquiescence of three of the five Republican county chairmen, and he's gotten the support of Brooklyn, Staten Island, and now the Bronx, and so Bloomberg could very well run for a third term against term limits as a Republican.
And the buzziest story of the week, of course, the rescue of the American cargo ship captain off the coast of Somalia, taken by pirates. And President Obama, a lot of people worried, Hillary Clinton prominently, what he would do with that 3 a.m. in the morning call, handled his first foreign crisis, a little one admittedly, but handled it, everybody says, well.
Well, absolutely. And there's some, you know, I've seen a lot of blogs saying that, you know, he didn't do much and he shouldn't be credited with a victory. But look, if it turned out awful, and thank goodness it did not, but if it turned out awful, he would certainly be blamed for it. When you think of the Pueblo, you think of the Mayaguez, you think of all these ships commandeered and seized, this has turned out certainly better than it could have, and it was a good success.
When President Clinton sent the Harlan County to Haiti and turned it around within view of the shore.
And a lot of the other foreign policy stuff is not going so well. We still don't know what our goals, our hopes are in Afghanistan. Pakistan seems completely unable to control its own country. Iran is holding a U.S. citizen, trying her for espionage. The rest of the foreign policy doesn't look that great.
Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking about a revolt of a different sort. The Tea Party's being held around the country today on Tax Day. Stay with us, and don't forget to send us in your worst email blunders. Send it to talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday. We're reeling through another edition of The Political Junkie. Ken Rudin is here with us, and we want to hear what's keeping your political passion juiced. If you've been to a tea party this week or in previous weeks, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Or if you have questions about the political effect of these anti-tax, anti-big government rallies, join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. If you can't get enough of Ken, hang out after the show. Producer David Gura will host a web chat at npr.org in about 20 minutes' time. Today is Tax Day across the country. Groups of Americans disenchanted with what they believe is excessive government spending are holding tea parties. J.P. Frayer is among them here in Washington, D.C. He's the managing editor of the American Spectator, was at a rally in Lafayette Plaza, and is joining us now on the phone from his office. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And what was the scene like?
The scene was amazing. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that we would be able to fill up Lafayette Square as much as we did, but we definitely had a very large crowd there. And we had a stage. Regular citizens and, you know, sort of, you know, quasi-celebrities were there speaking as well, just side by side. And it was pretty clear that this thing is genuine.
Genuine and not the creature of any particular political party?
No, not at all. In fact, the number of people that you talk to, if you ask them, so how'd you feel about George W. Bush, they hiss. I mean, they know that Bush is the person that started this off. He had pledged to uphold small government principles. He completely sold it out and then handed it over to the Obama administration, which, of course, has been justifying what they've been doing, saying, look, you know, the Bush administration started this. We're just going to keep going with it.
And they've got a mess to clean up, and they say the only way to get the economy back on track is, well, all that spending, but that's exactly what all these people are one of the things they're objecting to.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's there are a number of people in the group that are small business owners, and they can't really understand why it is that the government thinks that they know how to spend their money better than the average person does, or that the average small business owner does. Because the whole idea of recovering the economy is, if that's the idea, why not allow the actual engines of the economy, that is small business owners, why not allow them to move forward with things?
Well, that's their argument anyway, and the Obama people. Let's not get into that discussion. It's this is, though, the equivalent of a political flash mob?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it was being planned for about a month, but when it comes to when we talk about planning, the kind of, it's so haphazard. I mean, we're using social networks like Facebook and Twitter, and just circulating things on blogs, and you kind of never know who's going to show up. So, I think all of us were blown away. It's also very important for me to note this. Frequently, what happens at a lot of protests is you use buses to bring people in,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't do anything like that. These people came in from, you know, Vienna, Fredericksburg, Williamsburg even, came here from there because they really felt strongly about these issues. And they took time off from their work day so that they could protest. This is real.
Let's get a caller on the line. And Steve is with us. Steve calling from St. Louis.
Hi. Here in St. Louis, Missouri, a while ago, there was a big Tea Party protest. And to be honest, I didn't go. I read a lot about it. I got some invites. But the vibe I get from a lot of this is that you have a lot of people who are against taxation but don't particularly stand for anything. I understand that you can generate support for a particular candidate in the short term doing that, but I've never heard anyone say, these are things that government should, or at least from this movement, say these are things that government should provide. We need X amount of money to provide that, so the tax system should do this in order to provide money. And I mean, that just seems like such a logical place to start, because if you're just going to be constantly against anything, well, I mean, what should government do? Should we abolish the FDIC so that when banks fail, that all the depositors lose out? Should we privatize our entire military? It seems like the private sector or somebody else besides our present government could provide just about anything. So,
well, Ron Paul wanted to send privateers against the pirates in Somalia, but Jay Prefrere, is this a anti-movement? Is it for anything?
I think it is for something. I think it's for tax breaks. I think it's for tax cuts. I think it's for enabling small business owners to do the things that they do, which is create jobs. It's true. We're against taxes, but taxes are a proposal that's counter to the status quo. As in, I have my money now. I will have less of it. I will have less of it at the end of the day because the government has taken it from me. And for them to do that, it needs to be justified. And so they justify it and they legislate it and so on. But it is a movement that is talking about how we need to address and empower small business owners and average individuals that can make their fate better than the government can for them.
Ken?
We had a previous administration that was basically best known for cutting taxes, and of course that was the philosophy of the Bush administration, and yet the Republicans were voted out in 2006 and 2008 mostly for the Republicans' mishandling of the economy.
Absolutely.
So how do you justify or at least compare it to what's going on today?
Well, I think that there needs to be an addendum to that, which is that the Bush administration was so focused on tax cuts that they didn't also try to shrink the size of government. Because the other side to that two-headed beast is, would it be a two-headed beast?
Whatever. No, I think you're starving the beast.
Right. Well, you're starving the beast, but eventually that beast is supposed to start stumbling because it's not able to operate. And yet we started building up an even larger deficit. And you need to start cutting back on government at the same time as you're cutting back on taxes. And Bush did fail at doing that, and that's a big problem. Because if I were to try to start a business tomorrow, it would be too difficult for me to do within a reasonable amount of time, especially in the District of Columbia. I mean, we have a problem with small business in the District of Columbia.
Well, JP, you are the managing editor of a business called The American Spectator. You keep saying the American Spectator behind some of these. Are you supporting them?
Yes, the American Spectator is backing the effort insofar as they're allowing me to use my my job title when I do these things. But they have not given any money at all. They haven't given very many resources. They've just allowed me to sort of put some of my time toward that. But basically, it's also been my own personal time. So.
Okay. Well, JP, thanks for spending some of your time today with us.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Let's go now to Glenn Reynolds, who teaches law at the University of Tennessee. His blog is called Instapundit. He's with us now by phone from a tea party in Knoxville, Tennessee. He also wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal, which is called Tax Day Becomes Protest Day. You can find a link to it on our website. Glenn Reynolds, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And what's the scene like there in Knoxville, Tennessee?
Well, I'm standing here at the base of the famous Sun Sphere, which many people may remember from a Simpsons episode, in the World's Fair Park. And the World's Fair Amphitheater is going to be the scene of a tea party here in about an hour, which I'll actually be covering for PJTV.com. Already there are quite a few people here. Some of them are in colonial dress. I see a sign that says impeach them all, ASAP, and another sign that says don't tax me, bro. And, here's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. To compel a man with his taxes to subsidize the propagation of ideas which he disbelieves and abhors is sinful and tyrannical. So there's a lot of different stuff and a very diverse-looking crowd here.
You wrote, interestingly, that this has good news and bad news for both Republicans and Democrats. Let's begin with the Republicans. This is, well, seemingly anti-administration.
Well, there's no question that these things have been galvanized by the huge jump in spending and borrowing under the Obama administration. And there was a certain amount of unhappiness under Bush. I was actually involved in a movement called Pornbusters, which managed to irritate Trent Lott some. But this increased degree of spending has a lot of people upset. But they're pretty unhappy with Republicans as enablers, too. And I would say that the Republicans would be very ill-advised to just assume that this is a movement that's going to propel them into office. I think they're going to have to change their ways as well.
Here's an email we have from Eric in Kentwood, Michigan, who said he wasn't able to make my local party. However, I am definitely sympathetic. As much as I respect Dr. Paul's attempt to reform the Republican Party, according to referring to Ron Paul, the former Libertarian Party candidate for president and a former candidate for the Republican nomination as well, he goes on to say, I find it repugnant that people like Rush Limbaugh and the Republicans are hijacking this thing. The previous administration is as responsible for the mess we're in as the present, and neoconservatives are not going to be of any help to those who share Ron Paul's convictions.
Well, you know, the Ron Paul people did amazingly well considering that they were such purists. They wanted to kick everybody out of their movement. I think that, you know, in a political movement, you have to be willing to let people go and sin no more. I know that at a number of the Tea Parties around the country, Republican politicians in particular have asked to speak, and in quite a few cases, they've been told thanks, but no thanks. You know, we're going to have another one of these on July 4th, and we'll see what you do between now and then and decide whether we want you to speak.
And you mentioned bad news for Republicans and good news, but there's also good news and bad news for Democrats. Of course, they just elected the agent of change, Barack Obama.
Well, that's right. The Democrats have elected the agent of change, and the fact that that we had hope, change, and post-partisanship is the slogan, and people are turning out in mass around the country to express their unhappiness with the way things are going. It's kind of a bit of bad news for the Democrats. The good news for the Democrats is that if the Republicans blow this, it could turn into a pretty broad-based third-party movement, which is probably more likely to benefit the Democrats than the Republicans.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Joe, and Joe's calling us from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah, I just came back from the teabagging party thing that they had here in Cedar Rapids, and I was one of the probably two or three people that was, I guess, protesting the protesters. So it was rather interesting to stand on the bridge in downtown Cedar Rapids and have the nice folks threaten to throw us off the bridge and drop the F-bombs on us and things like that. Very strange people that, you know, vote against their own economic interests.
Well, that's from your point of view. They like their economic interests just fine.
Well, but in Cedar Rapids, looking around, it seemed to be mostly the same folks that protested our election about a month ago to increase the sales tax in Cedar Rapids one penny for a short term to recover from the flood. Now, these guys organized big time against that because they don't want to pay the extra penny. They don't want to recover from the flood. It was the same folks. It was the same radical that we see show up at all of these things around here.
Well, it's interesting. Thanks very much, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. And Glenn Reynolds, who are these people?
Well, you know, there are all kinds of people. I think, oh, there goes somebody with a sign that says Obama bow to the Constitution. You know, I think that what's interesting is a lot of the signs I see seem more concerned with the debt than with the taxes per se. And I really don't think this is people who are unhappy about having to take tax money out of their own pocket. I think they're more unhappy with the direction that they see the country is heading in, which is toward a more European socialist model that I think they don't like.
Let's see if we can go now to Doug, and Doug's with us from Allen County, Indiana.
Good afternoon, Neil. I hope everyone's doing well there.
I hope so.
Good, good. What we're protesting here with the Libertarian Party is simply the reckless deficit spending that's been going on. If you look at the U.S. Treasury numbers, and this is no radical organization, this is the U.S. Treasury, last year we spent $451 billion in interest payments alone on the national debt. That didn't pave one inch of road, that didn't educate one child, that didn't put one bullet in a soldier's gun. That was just interest payments. So all we want to do here is share how big the debt is. The Congressional Budget Office is projecting deficit spending through 2019, and it's got to stop. This is creating a malignant tumor on the body economics of America.
And, Doug, you say we. Are you part of this movement?
Yes, I'm hoping to do my small part and simply share information on the national debt and the damage it's doing to us.
Are you holding a Tea Party today?
We're holding a tax protest party, and it's not so much against taxes, but it's against the fiscal irresponsibility of the federal government.
All right, Doug, good luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Good luck to you.
Bye-bye. We're talking about Tea Parties. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us, as he is every Wednesday, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get back to Glenn Reynolds, a professor of law at the University of Tennessee there in Knoxville, apparently shooting some B-roll of the Sun Sphere, which I got familiar with. I was actually one of the two reporters ever assigned to cover the World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee, back when it opened up. But, Glenn, I guess one question that has to be asked is, does this have any legs to it? Is this a movement that's going to last beyond today?
Well, that's actually an interesting question, and with a movement this decentralized and spontaneous, it's hard to know. You know, I actually ask you my Wall Street Journal piece, is it a flash crowd or a flash in the pan? What I think is likely to give it some legs is that a lot of the people involved are getting involved in local political organizing. They've got some crowds together. They've got some email lists and the like. They've got people who have never been politically this active, trying to get active for the first time. And I think they're going to be involved. I think they're going to actually produce primary challenges for a number of Republicans who thought they were safe generally try to tug things more in their direction.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens. Ken, do you see this movement rising up?
Well, I was just interested in what Glenn just said. I mean, they're talking about primary challenges to other Republicans. So if anything that comes out of this, it could very well be a more problems within the Republican happy family, whereas the Democrats still have, you know, huge control majorities in the House and Senate, likely to gain more in 2010, and while the Republicans beat each other up. So ultimately, it could help the Democratic Party and President Obama.
Well, let's see if we go to Andrew. Andrew with us from Cleveland.
Yeah, hi. I was just driving through a protest today in Willoughby, Ohio, on my route, and a lot of the signs that I saw were anti-socialism. Everybody seemed to be on the anti-socialism bandwagon with this whole thing today. And I, for one, am of the opinion that we're kind of hypocritical about that idea in America. You know, we were all for it in the movies when the big groups help out the small guy. But whenever we get involved with our money or our government, all of a sudden anything like that, anything that even gets near that becomes socialism. I also saw a lot of senior citizens protesting against universal health care, which I thought was kind of ironic, considering that of all the people in the country, they probably have the best access to it.
Well, thanks very much, Andrew. Appreciate the phone call and the report. Socialism has become one of those buzzwords that is anti-administration, Glenn Reynolds. And, of course, the Socialist Party says, hey, Barack Obama's not a socialist. But anyway, this is one of the things that goes on. Is this directed toward any one candidate? And if so, any one party? You said not Republican, not Democratic. Could this be a third party?
Well, I think it could be. I mean, I think that the Republicans run that risk if they blow it. I think a lot of people here would be happy if they saw the Republicans starting to stand up against spending and return to at least their rhetorical roots in the 90s as the party of fiscal restraint. I think that you're going to see this in a lot of places. And, you know, all politics is local, and the Tea Parties really are local. They're local protests. They're happening in, I think, every congressional district in the country, or nearly so. And I think one of their impacts is going to be to get members of Congress to pay attention, to realize that there is a constituency out there that favors small government and would like to see less, not more, in the way of spending and deficits. And I think that's going to be a big part of their impact on both parties.
Glenn Reynolds, thanks very much for your time today. Give my regards to the Sun Sphere.
Thank you.
Glenn Reynolds teaches law at the University of Tennessee. His blog is called Instapundit. He was with us from a tax day tea party in Knoxville. And again, if you'd like to see his op-ed that he wrote for the Wall Street Journal, there's a link to it at our website at npr.org. There you can also read the Political Junkie column authored by our guest every Wednesday, Ken Rudin, who's with us here in 3A. Ken, as always, thanks very much.
And I'll see you later on that web chat.
Okay. Coming up, our email challenge. What's the most embarrassing email you've ever sent? Share your moment of horror and hit send very carefully. This is NPR News.